Okay, bing me. You bing me, I'll slap a hoe.
Emails.podbean.com.
It's Google, motherfucker.
Welcome to the call to Ian, you cop-sucking motherfucking dog shit ass cunt bitch.
Welcome to the Ian Ellis Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Ellis. There's no comedy on this episode, so if that's what you're looking for, you could just skip this one. Wait for the next. In this one, my buddy Scott Brennan came over. I had already had about a bottle of Jaeger by the time he got there, and he had more beer and other stuff. So this is all about artificial intelligence and simulation theory and altered states of consciousness. Taking adventures to the Nut Hut. So I hope you guys enjoy this. And then Thursday, tomorrow, I'm getting together with Michael McCabe, and we're going to talk about the economy and money and how the country works. And I'm going to do some stand-up over at Brad Stupak's open mic, and we're going to have a good time. So see you guys in a couple days. Wubba lubba dub dub. Also, the instructions are still the same. You still need to turn up to enjoy this. I was pretty turned up, and if you're not turned up, you're not going to enjoy it. People have asked me, if I don't get turned up, can I still enjoy it? Not as much. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're a square. You gotta drink something. You gotta smoke something. Meditate, push-ups, whatever you do. Do something. Don't just sit there. All right. Peace.
Observation. Multi-screen viewing engages me like the kinetic equivalent of an abstract or impressionist painting.
Humans must merge with machinery in order to stay relevant in a world of increasingly advanced artificial intelligence. Speaking at the World Government Summit in Dubai, the Tesla and SpaceX CEO said humans are limited by the speed at which they transmit data. Musk proposed a high-bandwidth connection to the human brain would allow us to transmit digital info faster than our current fastest method, typing. Musk says an artificial general intelligence has the potential to make humans irrelevant. He sees integration with technology as a necessary step in order to avoid this.
In the sci-fi film 2001, A Space Odyssey, Hollywood mined our fears of machines taking over mankind. But some of the tech world's greatest minds worry it may not be pure science fiction. At a speech last year at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, SpaceX and Tesla CEO Elon Musk called artificial intelligence potentially, quote, our biggest existential threat.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon. You know all those stories where there's the guy with the pentagram and the holy water, and he's like, yeah, you sure you can control the demon? Didn't work out.
Famed physicist Stephen Hawking is also worried, as is Microsoft founder Bill Gates, who ironically helped lay the foundation for artificial intelligence, or AI. Experts say machines are still far from being as intelligent as humans, but things can change quickly.
The field is progressing very rapidly right now. There are things happening that 10 years ago we would have said, no, there's no way we're going to be that far along in 10 years' time.
Self-driving cars is one example. Voice recognition, another. But in the near term, what worries Russell and other AI experts are robotic weapons, machines that can function entirely without the guidance of humans, known as fully autonomous weapons.
What happens when machines become more competent at performing any and all physical and mental labor? If AI becomes more competent in every regard, then what purpose or function would be left for us to serve?
The next big step for AI is artificial general intelligence, or AGI, with an almost human-like ability to generally figure things out. It's widely expected that once AI passes human level, it will accelerate exponentially. Soon after this, trying to understand the AI's world may be like an ant trying to understand the internet. After 1,000 years, we'd be no closer to understanding. But many are more concerned that AI may simply squash us like pests. While movies tend to make AI human-like, experts believe it may be more alien, creepy, and calculating. If it could save a few minutes by eradicating humans, our demise would be brutally efficient. Elon Musk is worried that humans might just be the biological bootloader for digital superintelligence. He's donated $10 million to research on how to keep AI positive and founded OpenAI, a project aiming to share AI's advantages so that it can't be controlled by a small group. Musk hopes a neural lace will be developed, connecting our brains to the AI. He notes that we already have two communicating parts of the brain and believes the third layer will be a wonderful upgrade. As Nick Bostrom says, we have what may be an extremely difficult problem with an unknown time to solve it, on which quite possibly the entire future of humanity depends.
20 years from now, I believe that human-like robots like those will walk among us. They will help us. They will play with us. They will teach us. They will help us put the groceries away. I think that the artificial intelligence will evolve to the point where they will truly be our friends. Do you want to destroy humans? Please say no.
Okay, I will destroy humans.
World leaders need to take the threat of killer robots seriously. That was the warning delivered by a group of experts to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland last week. The military could use killer robots to track down and kill people without being guided by human beings. Some could be human or animal-sized or extremely tiny, the size of an insect capable of moving exceedingly fast. The experts warned they could be as deadly as nuclear weapons and need to be regulated now before an arms race begins, and Gordon, of course, to keep them out of the hands of terrorists.
And it's important to recognize that this is true by virtue of speed alone, right? So imagine we just built a super intelligent AI, right, that was no smarter than your average team of researchers at Stanford or MIT. Well, electronic circuits function about 1 million times faster than biochemical ones. Okay, so this machine should think about 1 million times faster than the minds that built it. So you set it running for a week, and it will perform 20,000 years of human-level intellectual work, week after week after week. How could we even understand, much less constrain, a mind making this sort of progress? Another reason we're told not to worry is that these machines can't help but share our values because they will be literally extensions of ourselves. They'll be grafted onto our brains and will essentially become their limbic systems. Now, take a moment to consider that the safest and only prudent path forward recommended is to implant this technology directly into our brains.
Words and images evade rational analysis, allowing subliminal hints of the future to leak through. Transient and elusive, these must be grasped quickly. Computer animations imbue even breakfast cereals with an hallucinogenic futurity. Music channels process information blips, avoiding linear presentation, implying limitless personal choice. These reference points established, an emergent worldview becomes gradually discernible amidst the media's white noise. An era of the conceivable made concrete and of the casually miraculous.
Jackson Pollock.
Jackson Pollock, that's right, the drip painter. Okay, he let his mind go blank and his hand go where it wanted. Not deliberate, not random, someplace in between. They called it automatic art. Let's make this like Star Trek, okay? Engage intellect.
Excuse me?
I'm Kirk, your head's the warp drive. Engage intellect. What if Pollock had reversed the challenge? What if instead of making art without thinking, he said, you know what? I can't paint anything unless I know exactly why I'm doing it. What would have happened?
Value is that which one acts to gain and or keep. The concept, value, is not a primary. It presupposes an answer to the question, of value to whom and for what? It presupposes an entity capable of acting to achieve a goal in the face of an alternative. Where no alternative exists, no goals and no values are possible. There is only one fundamental alternative in the universe, existence or non-existence, and it pertains to a single class of entities, to living organisms. The existence of inanimate matter is unconditional. The existence of life is not. It depends on a specific course of action. Matter is indestructible. It changes its forms, but it cannot cease to exist. It is only a living organism that faces a constant alternative, the issue of life or death. Life is a process of self-sustaining and self-generated action. If an organism fails in that action, it dies. Its chemical elements remain, but its life goes out of existence. It is only the concept of life that makes the concept of value possible. It is only to a living entity that things can be good or evil. To make this point fully clear, try to imagine an immortal, indestructible robot, an entity which moves and acts, but which cannot be affected by anything, which cannot be changed in any respect, which cannot be damaged, injured, or destroyed. Such an entity would not be able to have any values. It would have nothing to gain or to lose. It could not regard anything as for or against it, as serving or threatening its welfare, as fulfilling or frustrating its interests. It could have no interests and no goals.
We could essentially be canceling the prospects of the evolution of consciousness, because if this thing wipes us out, Nick Bostrom, the philosopher who wrote a great book on this entitled Superintelligence, I think he calls this the Disneyland without children. I mean, like, basically, we could build this incredibly powerful, intelligent landscape that continues to refine itself and its own powers in who knows what ways, perhaps that are unimaginable to us. And yet the lights aren't on. You know, there's nothing that it's like to be this machine or system of machines.
You never would have made a single mark.
Yes, you see, there's my guy, there's my buddy who thinks before he opens his mouth. He never would have made a single mark. The challenge is not to act automatically. It's to find an action that is not automatic, from painting to breathing to talking to fucking to falling in love.
Welcome to Ian Elstad, Podbean.com. Today my special guest is...
Brennan Weaver.
Brennan Weaver, or yeah. Scott Brennan.
Yeah, you call me Scott.
The co-CEO, co-founder, mutual partner of SMS.
I wouldn't even go that far yet. It's like, I'm just doing like design work for him. That's pretty much it.
You're courting him.
Yeah, I mean, I want to work with him. I want to do business.
You guys had a private meeting.
Yeah, I mean,
you got together.
Yeah.
Near my house.
Yeah.
Didn't call me.
Right.
You were like, I'm just hanging out with him.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to him about the shirt business.
So you're serious?
I'm very serious about it. I want to go out and start making money for myself, and it's one way in. It's t-shirts, you know.
All right. So we're gonna get to what attracted you to Joe. But first, I have to talk about my last episode with Joe Lee. It was a double episode.
Oh.
Because I didn't do one the week before, but I don't have a lot of listeners. Like, most of the people that listen out of obligation.
The few listeners you have know that.
No.
We all know that.
No, they're all just people that are like, they're humoring me. Nobody's actually into this.
Yeah.
I'm doing the best I can, and nobody is down with this.
You know, like, white noise machines?
Yes.
I would use your podcast for the same purposes. I'd put it in an office so no one could hear it, but just, like, not go insane and blow their brains out. That's what your podcast
should be. That drives me insane.
Dude, that's a compliment. I tried giving you a compliment. You took it how you wanted to.
Dude, you're almost as good as white noise. Like, when I want to stop thinking...
You're a little better.
I don't really know what I'm doing. The show's always evolving.
Yeah.
And I'm collecting the best information I can... and trying to put it out there in a way that's easy to consume.
It's hard to take you seriously when you have a dog hat from Adventure Time right now. Are you going to get meta with the hat?
Would you like to describe my appearance? Nobody knows what I look like.
You're very white.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a Nazi propaganda poster nose.
I look like a giant toddler.
Yeah.
Except I have hipster glasses.
I think one time I described your head as a Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes. I'm a Chucky doll with... with no hair.
Yeah. Still beautiful. You're beautiful to me.
I'm trying to, in this life, figure out what the world is.
Okay.
And I think you're doing the same.
Yeah.
And getting text messages. So I go through philosophy, I go through education, my educational background is in anthropology, I go through experience, the last 8 or 9 years I've been doing stand-up comedy. There was a period where I was given Seroquel, which basically turned me into like a serial killer. It gets rid of all your emotions. Well, for me, everybody's brain chemistry is different.
Yeah.
For me, it just left me.
Mood stabilizer?
It left me with no emotions.
Okay.
And what I learned during that period, it was about 6 months of my life, was how much other people were affected by their emotions.
Yeah.
Like, kind of the serial killer mindset is you look at people and you see how much they're programmed by, you know, on television, it's what's an acceptable version of a black person? What's an acceptable version of a white person? What's an acceptable version of, you know, a man, a woman, a gay? And that gets programmed into people, and then they have their own emotional needs for love, safety, and acceptance. And they might have healthy ways of getting those needs met, or they might have unhealthy ways of getting those needs met. But most times when people get mad at you, you see like, oh, you have a need that's trying to get met, and you're acting out, and you can completely see through the horseshit they're presenting you in our shared reality. It's a very unusual way to interpret and go through the world.
Yeah. Well, I'm very high, so I got freaked out by you saying that.
I'll add to that, I had an enlightenment experience.
All right. Are you not a serial killer anymore?
I'm
you
not.
Just said you were.
It's not about killing people.
You gotta let me know if you're gonna go into that dark stuff.
I think
can't keep up with that.
When a sociopath kills a person, it's to see.
Stop about
if,
killing, man. Go back to like cartoons.
I think when they do, when they do,
yeah,
it's to see does this matter?
Yeah.
Is anybody gonna stop me? Are there any rules? Is there anything I can do that I will feel bad about? And it turns out the answer is no.
Yeah. And why haven't you killed somebody, or have you?
It's the ultimate test of the rules.
Oh, my God.
I think.
You're just letting me go. Now I'm going to be paranoid the whole time we're hanging out. This whole podcast.
So, I have my experience as a regular person, and I had a lot of friends die very suddenly when I was young, and that gave me, like, terrible post-traumatic stress.
Okay.
And then I went through a really bad marriage and divorce, and that led me into this, like, sociopathic...
So
I took the Seroquel.
You wanted the numbness.
I did. But it turned out like it wasn't a chemical imbalance. It was a terrible codependency where like I didn't value myself. I didn't see myself as a personal agent. I valued myself based on what other people thought of me. So if you needed me, I loved you. If you didn't need me, I hated you because that was a threat to my personal sense of value.
Oh, okay.
This is a change I went through, a metamorphosis as a human being. Perception of reality was one way, then it went another.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to convince somebody that their point of view was wrong?
Yeah. I guess when I was younger, when I cared about that stuff.
And it goes nowhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, some, yeah, usually. I'm going to get a call from my wife. Can I take this?
Oh, let me pause. Brittany, you're ruining the podcast, but I like
it. Pause it. Still in that honeymoon phase where I love hearing from her.
How long have you been together?
10 years.
Yeah, that's not a honeymoon phase. You just genuinely like being around her.
Really? Everyone says it's been honeymoon.
Well, they can go fuck themselves.
They've been saying it for a long time, I guess.
That's how I feel about my wife. It was like, I just like being around her.
Yeah.
All the time.
Dude, what's crazy is that she has been making me like a more... I've been coming more and more positive. Like, where I almost get... Like, how... When you said the serial killer thing, it's like, ooh, bad vibes. I don't... Like, I'm like, in a world of, like, puppy dogs and...
We'll get to this, because we're going to talk about perception of reality, and yours has changed
in a couple different times. Everything should be positive.
One thing they recently said in Rick and Morty I liked a lot was, when smart people get happy, they don't recognize themselves.
I kind of don't recognize... It's crazy.
Do you want to talk about that?
Sure, I'll talk about that.
Because I've been in that position where you do the work, and suddenly you're a good person, but you're not comfortable or you don't recognize who you are as a good person or a person that values himself. What was your transition?
Caitlin. It was a rough transition. I'll tell you that. Started with a visit to the hospital and then 5 days in a psych ward.
Also, I said this on my last podcast. I've known several people to go to the psych ward. Not alone.
It's crazy.
How
common it is.
A lot of people, like, they get to this existential point where they're like, God is bullshit. There's no plan. It's just whatever the fuck is happening. There's no point to life. Why am I doing this? And then they fall apart. Why did you fall apart?
I don't know. I guess just not being medicated. So you've been through it too, though.
But you chalk it up to like a chemical imbalance.
Yeah, mine was a chemical. That's what they say.
So what was the negative effect of the chemicals you had in your brain?
I mean, when we hung out, I would always be up or down. It always seemed like I was
different. I couldn't tell.
Oh, okay.
I'm insane, so...
Yeah, I forget that you're there, too.
Everything you said, I was like, that makes sense.
You did just
Checks
say
out.
You were numb. You pretty much just said you wouldn't care if somebody...
I've come back, I've learned to feel.
Oh, okay. Are you in the happy puppy dog place?
But you got to a point where very suddenly your chemicals were changing, and you weren't... Your perception of reality was changing.
Yeah.
And you weren't necessarily cognizant of how it was changing, but at some point you went like, I don't think I see the world the way other people see the world. I might need some help.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I guess you saw it when I came out and tried to talk about the last digit of pi and stuff like that.
I thought you were just like in an upswing.
Yeah, I guess. No, I really believed it. I mean, I thought I was like getting like... talking aliens and shit like that. It got pretty wonky, and in some ways it's just like, man, that was like, it's like your life's like a cartoon. It's kind of awesome. But
it makes you special,
I guess. So I think everybody's pretending to not be crazy, and they are.
I think that's right. And one point I was going to make is like, you can't convince people to come over to change their mind about like guns or abortion or
when
like people just sort of believe what they believe.
Yeah.
The exception of that is, like, religion, where you emotionally affect people. You say, like, you're not a piece of shit.
Yeah.
You're loved. You're special. And then people change their whole life over, but you have to manipulate people's emotions to get them to change their mind about topics. Otherwise, people are pretty set in their ways.
Yeah. I mean, it's something, like, to, like, a root value. Like, it has to go deep into the subconscious. It's almost like a trigger. In order to change somebody's mind, like they have to be like severely triggered, and they have a strong emotional and primal reaction. Like that's what kind of like changes people's opinion, is that like that primal holy fuck moment, you know? And I think, or that just this can't be fucking real. That's fucking my brain up. Like where you just feel your brain like slowly disintegrate in your skull and reform or something, you know? Like. It was very specific.
Well, you've done a lot of trips. You've eaten a lot of shrooms.
I have, yeah.
Which means your perception of reality has been dramatically altered on a chemical level by something outside of yourself.
Yeah, that, yeah.
Did you ever feel like you were interacting with consciousness?
I used it to basically explain why things were so weird. I was using shrooms to get past, like... psychosis as a justification. So that's where that was at. Because if I had like a weird thought, I could go, oh yeah, that was because it's shrooms, or like acting weird. But if I was sober and acting weird, I wouldn't have a justification for it, you know.
What were some of your psychosis?
I thought, what do you mean? What happens?
What are the things you would blame on shrooms and be like, oh, I'm not crazy, that's just something I hallucinated?
I would, like, see Albert Einstein a lot. There was, like, phases where that was going on. I'd see him everywhere.
Sticking out his tongue?
Yeah, no, like, talking to, like, bushes and stuff like that, or, like, trying to communicate through numbers or license plates, you know? There was one time I thought I was, I died. Or, actually, no, there's two times I thought I died, and I was, like, dead walking as a ghost. Which really sucks if you're at work and you have to... And there's, I did it at work.
I'm dead. Leave me alone.
Yeah, I was trying to tell him to go back. Like, you're not supposed to be dead.
Which, explain okay. For people what your job is. You clean up...
I'm a project manager at a mitigation company.
It's like, what was it? Not it's
actually,
Sunshine.
Actually, can you edit that out?
God damn it. What is the time mark?
All right.
I shouldn't say where I work.
I took a screenshot, so I'll go back and edit that out. So, but you work
Thank you. Cleanup.
You clean up disasters.
Yeah.
Or suicides.
Everything. Yeah.
So sometimes you walk in the room, what kind of things have you seen?
Overdoses. Like, it's just the bodily remains of it. Let's see. Shootings. Dogfighting basements. All kinds of stuff.
Just the pit bull face half missing.
No, just a lot of dog shit from, like, years of them trying to train people. But, yeah, pretty much. It's gross. It's so... And it's like, no one wants to see it, but then you see it and you go, man, it could be so much worse, like, for, like, a cop or a firefighter or soldier. It's like, you're just getting a taste of it. It's not even, like, the real thing.
That experience in and of itself could change your perception of reality.
Yeah,
because you see,
it's all volunteer based. You cannot force somebody to do it, even if it's like their job. You can't.
You see on TV like the narrative of like cops shooting black guys or drug addiction, but then when you see it in reality, you understand like, oh my God, these are people.
Yeah,
terrible things are actually happening.
They have their own story. It's like when you walk through it, you almost make up a narrative in your head automatically. You just start I just start making up a story and a background for the house. And it's like your mind just automatically wants to connect with humans or understand another human, you know what I mean? So you reflect back what you want to see, of course. But
one thing I learned when I was in college, I had all these theories about how to end poverty. And then I started working at homeless shelters, the Hazard House. And when you're working hand in mouth with the poor...
You worked at a shelter?
Yeah, a lot of them,
And
actually.
You think that you were a serial killer.
No, I'm not a serial killer. But I worked with people, and you meet people that are genuinely drug addicted, people that genuinely are not going to turn their life around, and it's like...
Yeah.
So you have this theory about, like, oh, you teach people to love themselves and value themselves, and then you give them the education so they can get a job that allows them to make means, and then they can progress themselves in society... But the reality is you're going to meet people that don't want to do that. People that are lost in their self-hate and self-delusion. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do to drag them out of it.
Yeah.
And one of the problems in our society right now is, like, the millennials are a generation of armchair philosophers. Where they think they know, we change the vocab, things will be right. We just change the way we look at things, things will be all right. But reality is a lot more dramatic and painful than anything that we can theorize around.
Yeah.
There's a book called Making the Impossible Possible. If you want to end poverty, just do what that dude says.
What does he say to do?
He has a revolutionary view of how you want to create homeless shelters. So homeless shelters were created during World War II as a Band-Aid. It was a temporary measure. We were going through World War II and the Depression, and we were like, we'll do this for now, and we'll figure it out later. And then we gave up on figuring it out.
Oh, really? So that was pretty much like, all right, we need a quick fix, and then that became the standard.
It was like, let's just get through this depression, and then we'll figure out how to make people productive members of society, and we skipped over that part. We just kept going. Let them be broke.
Yeah.
Now, his point of view was
what,
like...
What year was that in?
You need to change the way people perceive themselves and society, because people that are born with nothing, it's very hard to get something.
Yeah.
Like... You know, money is a way to show that you have value as a human being in our society. But if you have nothing and you don't have access to money, then, like, violence becomes a way to show that you have value. Or, you know, drug dealing is like opening up a steel mill. You're walking away.
And a beer.
Get a beer. It's like opening a steel mill, you know, where there are none. There are no factory jobs. There is no, like, caterpillar in the hood. That's a way to stack money and show that you have value. And so he said, like, first of all, these homeless shelters, they train people for jobs that don't give a living wage. It's outdated jobs. It's how to work in a factory when it should be how to write code. It should be, like, the jobs of the future, not the jobs that are already redundant, because then you're applying for something that's already full. So before you can get this education, you need to have more value for yourself. So he would create these homeless shelters where it was, like, filled with immaculate beauty. And it was like, I want to put you in a place where you feel like you have value, where you feel like you're important for being here and you're part of something that's important that's moving forward. And as opposed to, like, a jobs training program where you show up to a room where, like, the light is hanging out of the ceiling and it's these old desks and there's graffiti everywhere and you're like, okay, today you're going to learn how to be a blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it doesn't matter what it looks like. You just, like, there's only so much that you can expect from our current society to have. You know what I mean? Maybe in the future that'll be.
We're going to talk about the future. Oh, that's okay. My big topic for tonight.
Nice.
Artificial intelligence.
Right. You want to take a pee break?
I want you to talk about SMS.
All right.
Before Let me talk about my last podcast.
Okay.
So it was a double episode. So I apologize if you were listening to it and you're like, this is taking too long. but it was me and Leroy and some comedy, and then me and Leroy and then some comedy.
Man, I fucking love Leroy.
Shout out to Leroy.
The guy is hilarious. Every time I see him, I just laugh my ass off. He's just a funny ass dude.
He's super cool. I love him.
He's super fly.
Yeah.
Like, he dresses.
And if you guys had
awesome.
Any idea how shitty his life has been, you'd be like, you're fucking kidding me, right?
Dude, that guy.
He's great.
I don't know where he gets his, like, fashion style. Like, it's kind of like the Great Flags America guy meets cool.
Anyway, and then I had Joe on. Joe is my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And I was drunk and smoking, and he came over, and
he was hilarious, too.
He's super funny. I love him.
So naturally funny.
I've been doing comedy for like 8 or 9 years. The funniest people I know don't do stand-up comedy.
They really don't.
And you frustrate me because, like, you're my favorite comic, and you're like, I'm done with this. I mean,
everybody's been telling me that that's a stupid idea, and it's like making the gears turn again, so I don't know.
I'm in the same place where it's like, I don't want to do the work. I don't want to shoot videos. I don't want to clip myself. I don't want to submit myself to bookers. I just want to go do the thing. I want to be funny.
That's really all I want to do.
We can talk about art and comedy and art versus comedy. So many topics to get back to.
Yeah.
But I had Joe on, and we were both turned up, and he's talking about the company, and I just kept interrupting him with jokes. Rather than, like, taking him seriously and being like, okay, go on, tell more. Like, being a good interviewer, I was more interested in funny. And I apologize, guys. I hope you were entertained by the episode, but my interest was in getting the funny out of it. But SMS is amazing. They're doing great.
Did you get the funny out or no?
I feel like I did, but people were like, what? Hey, what the F?
Ask one of 12 of your listeners.
I heard out of 3 out of 12 of them.
One was the guy that got interviewed.
Yeah. He told me not to post it. He was like, I don't even want to be bothered.
don't put this up there.
But he says that about everything. And I thought he was very entertaining. His ability to tell stories is amazing. I love Joe. He's the best.
He's got that good storytelling voice for, like, total drunkard stories. You know what I mean? Like, where it's just like, oh, dude, we were drinking in the basement. And, like, dude, when we went out to that super secret meeting, he told me one, like, how he came up with the logo for SMS. Hilarious.
That's the story we tried to get to. We went through an hour, and he didn't tell the story. So,
can you tell the story? No, because he's got
to
tell
no,
the story.
No, you have to tell
no,
it.
No, I'm not telling his
story. I got
story.
An angry email saying, like, I listened to all of that. I didn't even get the story. Can you please just tell the story?
I'll tell the story after I go pee, maybe. Probably. I'll tell it the best I can.
All right. We're going to take a pee break. This is pause number 7.
Sorry. All right.
We're back. So many things I want to talk about.
Thank you. I feel so much better. I really fucking do. And thank you for letting me do a podcast, by the way.
I love you. You're my favorite.
I know. You're my favorite.
I want people to connect to people like you and Joe because you're making original shit. How cool is it to be, like, on the ground floor? I'm aware of something that nobody else knows about, and it's actually cool. It's not just some random shit.
I love underground scenes like that, especially local. I've kind of just done that my whole life. You know, always scheming with people, like, how to, like, get into a scene or something like that. And that's why, I love the comedy scene. Comedy scene is amazing. I don't know what it is about it. It's just funny being what?
Why did you give me your keys? I can't open a bottle with that.
Where's the lighter?
Oh.
You gotta improvise.
Why do you love comedy? Is it punk rock to you?
It is punk rock to me.
I feel like there's two schools of comedy. It's like the punk rock scene and the comedian scene.
Mine is totally punk rock. It always is. Like, where it's just, you just do it to fuck.
What is the difference?
I think that you do what you want, and it's not about the money, so you get to be your own clown. I mean, you get to toot your own horn with your comedy. That's pretty much it. It's either Do you want to make comedy that makes you laugh and what you stand for, or do you want to appease people? And both schools of thought, there's nothing wrong with either of them. I wish I had...
Do you, boo-boo?
I wish I had more of the comedian drive for it, you know? Like, but I have
to
that...
To have with, an act.
Yeah, like, I have that with art, though. You know what I mean? I take that very seriously and everything like that.
Which is something we originally bonded on, and it seems like you've changed your mind, which is that art is gay.
Art is gay.
You take yourself seriously, and you're like, these lines are so important.
Yeah, it is.
Look
yeah.
at these feelings that I drew a picture of.
This is my inner soul.
Don't you feel bad when you see this?
Dude, you know what's funny? A lot of people look at my work, and they always, like, I always get this comment, like, everywhere I go, at least once a show. Like, they look at it, and they go, wow, man, that's fucking sad. I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, your world, it's sad. And I'm like, I'm not trying to paint sad. I'm painting what I think is cool. It's not
I used to get that as a comic before I got funnier. Mm. Like, because I used to think it was about, like, the attempt, where it's like, I'm trying to be the most honest, or the most real, or the most heart-wrenching, but I wasn't being funny.
Yeah.
And
I think everybody goes through that.
Well, you gotta go through that to get to the next phase, which is like, I can do that and be funny.
Yeah.
Or, you know, funny is the bottom line. It's the premium.
Yeah, that's what you really want. Even at the end of the day, no matter what style you want to choose, that's what you want. You know? Like, painters want to paint. It doesn't change the fact that you still want to paint. You know, it's just easier, I guess, to paint if you go abstract. You know? Not necessarily easier if you actually take it seriously. Because then you got to produce more to make that perfect one.
But Joe comes from skater culture. And skaters, they really don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Their lifestyle defies physics. That's how badass they are.
Yeah.
And punk rock, it got co-opted in the 90s. It became this, like, cynical, marketable thing.
Yeah.
But it's still out there. The essence of, like, I really just want to do this. I just to prove I can.
Yeah.
Which I think there's a value to that.
Yeah. And it's a harder road. I think it's a funner road, or it's a more fun road, but it's a harder road.
Is it more authentic or less authentic? Is it delusional?
No, I mean, it's authentic, and it's just as authentic as anything else is, I think, you know what I mean? It's just, what do you want, you know?
So that's
there's
some...
people that like G.G. Allen, you know, and what he did.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh,
by
really?
G.G. Allen.
He was a... crazy hardcore punk rocker heroin addict who used to shut the microphone up his ass live. It'd be like it'd be like performing the shows at like the bar. Those are the shows that he did for the punk rock scene. Like, no one wanted them around. He was so disgusting, and like, he would shit in his hand and throw it at the audience.
Oh my god, I can't imagine as a comic some open micer shoving the mic up their ass.
Dude, it was that equivalent. It was that equivalent, except like,
and
some
they
guy
put it back in the stand and it's coming up next.
Yeah, except he's like wearing like a dog collar and shit like that. And
what
shooting up heroin
the...
before. Dude, he used to take laxatives before he went on stage. That's how dedicated he was to the bit, though. Think about that guy. If he went to every open mic that he could to try and do the shit on stage and then throw it at the crowd. He's buying laxatives by the week.
But what is the value to that?
There's just value in itself, and thank God it's free. That knowledge is free. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't pay for that, and you wouldn't want to pay for that.
I think there's a value in breaking social norms, because it shows you there are no rules.
Yeah.
Hey guys, wake up. No one's in charge.
Yeah.
None of this means anything. You're all fucking nuts.
It's more like, hey, do you know this guy exists? He does? That's crazy. Yeah, thank you.
And you could be just like him.
if you put your heart into it, you can.
You're not even real enough to shit yourself on stage.
Do you even buy laxatives for your ex? You fucking hack.
Fucking douches.
What if people, like, made fun of him for taking laxatives? Like,
they
oh, you don't take a normal raw shit.
That was the bit
you don't
I did.
Eat sushi.
The bit I did with Joe was anything he told me, I expressed, like, what a sane person in retrospect would look back and say. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
What I was just doing, or what?
No, when I interviewed Joe, which I understand everything he did. Like, he got mutilated and tattooed. And I understand that. Like, you're with your friends, shit is going on, it seems like a good idea. But my commentary on it was like, Are you stupid? Like,
well,
you're a human that walks the earth. Okay, you got to get a job, and you're going to do this. You want to burn yourself with paper clips? That's a good idea. All right.
I mean,
but nobody has that purity of thought all the time. Yeah. Everybody gets lost in whatever their social interaction or delusion is.
I think the reason why I like it is because I have moments like that. I actually have a brand myself.
You have a bad decision on my neck. Dude, what is your brand?
Mine, it looks like an upside down heart. I tried to burn ink into my skin. I was like 13 and I didn't understand the concept of a tattoo, mm-hmm. apparently. Because I tried to just burn the ink into my skin. And that did not fucking work. And now I got a fucking permanent scar.
But it's there.
It is there. That bad. I look at that and I was like, God, you fucking idiot. Like, you need a needle at least. Don't. I literally just painted it on and then tried the. Stupid. What's your neck one?
I don't want to tell the story. It's embarrassing. Guys, I make mistakes.
Okay.
That's the story. Is
if I mention a tattoo, will you know which comic has it? You can't say their name.
I know
a real bad one.
I spent a long time hating myself and fallen for anything. And I regret most of my decisions.
Okay.
And we're here now. And we're trying to move forward.
Okay.
And I'm sorry. You know, I'm not going to get it right. I'm not a pope.
Okay.
I hate people that take some of that stuff too seriously. Like, part of, like, realizing who you are, here's some more sociopath stuff, is, like,
okay.
You can do something and say, like, I would never do that. And then you do it and you go, I did do that, and I still exist, and I'm still the same person.
Yeah.
That's not something I would do, but I did it. And you have to reckon that with those your are, sense
those,
of
are
self.
Are those cringe moments are you talking about? Where you exactly. Look back in your life and you're like, God damn it. God damn it.
You can't take it back. You can't undo it. You did that.
There's a song lyric. I can't think of the song, but it's you can't take the pain away. And I think that's something like where it's just like those real bad ones where you're like, I can't believe I fucking did that. You piece of shit. And it's like you feel bad to your core. But it's like you can't take the pain away. You gotta live with it for the rest of your life. But at least you know not to do it again.
So in this podcast, hopefully. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. In reality, in the real world.
Okay. That should be easy. Just look and it's like, you should have an answer, but you fucking don't.
I'm so far around the bend that, like, I'm questioning everything, and it's too far. I gotta rail it in.
Oh, I gotta get back. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
So I want to explore the things I think I know.
Dude, what you're doing is you're having fun with the craziness. And there's nothing wrong with it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's where you find the truth. It's like you've got to be absurd.
You find your truth. And it's like, it's true in itself. You know what I mean? Like,
if you do something that's absurd, but it holds true to the normative, you've uncovered something. You're like, oh, that's a pattern. That's something a lot of people do. That's something everybody does. I think it's a big part of comedy. You're getting texts.
Yeah.
So I want to go through some of the things I think I know. Everybody has hits. Alright, I recently gotten this guy, Dave Smith. Have you heard of him?
No.
Great comic. Guys, go find Dave Smith. He was on Ari Shaffir's podcast.
Okay.
And Joe Rogan's podcast. And he put out an album called Libertas. And then he has a podcast called Part of the Problem. Once I heard one, I was interested. So I went to all of the others. I devoured all of them.
What's it? One more time?
Dave Smith.
And what's
Libertas
the podcast?
On Gaslight Media or iTunes.
Real good. I love podcasts.
He's great.
Okay.
Because he's a libertarian, which is the side I find myself most frequently siding with. But he has these points, his talking points, and I found that he hit them over and over again. Episode after episode, interview after interview, and I was like, oh, he's got those 7 points about life. But he doesn't have anything else. That's what he's got. And I find that about a lot of talking heads. Is like they find their moments where they're like, I found some truth. I found my hit.
Yeah.
And that's all they do. But the next step is like, given that information, how do we find a solution? How do we change things?
Yeah.
And the way you change things is like, if there's an injustice, you find an alternative way to meet the needs of the people. I'm going all over the place.
You go there. You're going pretty, anyway, you're going I got, pretty meta.
I got my hits. So we're going to talk about them.
What are they? What are your hits?
Get your commentary.
Yeah, I want to know.
So the first one is, we're not alone.
So like aliens?
So there's, you know, so many galaxies and planets and habitable planets and on and on and on and on. Okay. But in our history, there are Neanderthals. And they were different species.
Yeah.
But they were sentient. And they had culture, and they had goods, and they had mythology, and they had language. They had everything we have, but they were different species.
Okay.
They're aliens. A different fucking species. Not the same DNA.
Dude, it's not... Dude, aliens come from space.
A different species.
Yeah.
They tell us the planet's made for us. A different species. Not in the Bible. A different species. So if they're here, they gotta be there. If they showed up here, they have to be somewhere in the infinite, you know.
You're going like reverse evolution now.
It's a thing that I think humans have to reckon with, because we think like this is all about us. Planet is made for us, history is about us, the future is about us, but it's like there was another, we're not alone. There was another one here. If it was here, it's gotta be there.
By here, you mean your apartment?
Yes, my wife is,
No, you...
No jokes about my wife.
You big meanie. You big meanie. I hate wife jokes. Do you? I don't know why. I do know why.
Here's how I do them differently. It's like, your average wife joke shows the guy to be a weak person.
Yeah.
Who's stupid.
Yep. And people don't realize that when they constantly criticize their wife, like where it's just like, you seem like an idiot.
Mine is about fucking my wife. My jokes are about how I get down when I'm in the bedroom or whatever, which is a level of intimacy that most comics don't share.
Yeah.
I think
it's like having a relationship. It's like most people don't aspire to be like Ray Romano comedy. You know what I mean? It's like, it kind of doesn't cross your head that you can be in a happy relationship. You know, it's like, I think Ray Romano and King of Queens are those... It seems like people interpret it automatically to be hacky if you get along with your wife.
You think a normal relationship is being cantankerous. Is like, there
That's
should be some...
That I don't know.
There should be some...
Can you define cantankerous? It's not... Cantankerous.
God damn it. I had
that
another
sounds
word
like
and I
a,
lost it.
Like a Greek porn star.
Cantankerous.
Look at my taint. Look how Greek my taint is.
It's so greasy.
I'm gonna rub Greek yogurt all over my taint.
You're gonna eat that fiber today. They bathe in milk. There's a lot of gluten in that culture.
Slightly sour.
It's a gluten-based theology.
What does that word mean for real, though?
Antagonizing.
Oh, okay.
Antagonist. I think that's the word I was looking for. They think that relationships should be antagonistic. Where one person is always competing with the other.
Yeah.
Back and forth. And there's like... Modern the humble family. Idiot prototype, which is like Married with Children, Homer Simpson, where it's like, I suffer, but really I love him, but I'm sassy, but really I'll sacrifice everything for him.
Yeah.
That's programming.
Yeah.
That is the media telling you what their idea of a human is. And you're measuring yourself by... Am I a human based on their standards rather than your standards as a being here on this planet experiencing this?
Ah, so it's like you should have... So
this is the kind of shit that fucks me up.
So you're wondering why people don't aspire for more? When it's those are such bad standards to hold yourself by?
So say you see that on TV. The dominant message is get married and be monogamous. And you find yourself not wanting to be monogamous. You're like, damn, I still want to fuck these bitches.
Yeah.
you have to deal with that contradiction. Your value of that is right comes from them telling you it's right, not your experience as a biological being. And your biological being wants to procreate with as many people as possible. There's a contradiction there that we have to reckon with. Sometimes our values exceed our biological understanding.
Yeah, I get that.
I worry about gay and transgender. What if it's a chemical imbalance?
I don't know.
There's a mental disorder. If you want to cut off your arm because you think you have you don't think you should have an arm.
Yeah.
That's considered a mental disorder. But if you want to cut off your genital and change your sex, that's an acceptable lifestyle. But it could just be a matter of balancing out the chemicals in the brain.
Maybe. Or it could be. I don't know.
Which
I'd have to ask someone, you know what I mean?
Who's to say what is normative? Who's to say what the shared reality is or what it's about? There are no rules.
Yeah. And if there are no rules, then, you know, there are no rules. Or if there are rules, then I don't know what the rules are, actually. You know? It seems like it's just exist and be happy are the rules. Or try and be happy. You know, try and keep your happiness. If that's the route some people go, that's the route.
But how do you define your happiness? Is it programmed into you?
I don't think.
What is the nature versus nurture of it?
I don't know if it is. I feel like it might be deeper than that, and I think it might have evolved, you know, especially with the internet. I think we're evolving mentally right now, and that's why there's so many conflicts of interest and why we don't agree on everything. So we might be taking some kind of hop in a direction that we don't know where we're going to go. We don't know.
Let me talk about a different time my consciousness was altered.
Okay.
So I had an enlightenment experience. Now, science would argue my posterior superior parietal lobe was overstimulated.
Okay.
I'm a biological being. My perception of reality is actually hallucinated.
Yeah.
It's not a direct one-to-one perception. It's my cognition of the perception.
Yeah.
That cognition can be overstimulated. It can be overprocessed to the point that it can't process the information. Now, when you overstimulate those parts of the brain, it loses sense of what is and isn't reality, what is or isn't your physical being. So where I think my fingers end, once it's overstimulated, it can't tell where my fingers end. So I'm everything. I'm the fence, I'm the sky, I'm all consciousness.
I am the hat you're wearing.
Yeah, I'm all of it.
Yeah.
All of the protons.
You're fucking Jake hat.
Now, I had an experience like that.
Okay.
Where I realized I was an eternal being made out of light.
Yeah.
I had a soul.
Okay.
Usually you think of a soul as like your physical being. Like it looks like you, but it's like blue and ethereal. Super spooky.
Mine?
Extra Casper. All people.
Oh, okay.
Yours looks like a wolf.
Wolf.
You have spirit animals.
Mine is a snail.
You have spirit animals in your eyes.
My spirit animal is a snail.
You stole that from Adventure Time.
A snail?
Yes.
How did I steal that from
you? I know you eat so many shrooms that you think your eyeballs go up to here, but they don't, Scott. They go right here and they look like a wolf. Your teen wolf.
You couldn't have gotten that more accurate.
your beard over? Club for men.
Huh?
You are beard club for men.
I do. I am a member of that. I tried to fucking cancel it. It wouldn't let me. I had to call.
You were too.
I still haven't gotten.
You had too much testosterone. You're like Scott. You can't. We can't let you go.
No, not yet.
You're the reason for the season.
Yeah.
What was I talking about? Enlightenment. Yeah. So, my sense of I'm an eternal being. It felt like reality was glitching out. That's the best way I can describe it. It was like. Glitching out. I'm losing touch with reality. And I saw a grid. It's similar to the grid I saw when I smoked DMT. Which, when I smoked DMT, it seemed like everything was made out of math. Everything was made out of perfect angles. There were no off angles.
That one seems scary to me.
It is scary.
I've done salvia, which I guess is the closest. And that was pretty wild. And I don't think I would... I don't need any more experiences with it, is pretty much what I'm saying. I'm fine with the ones I have.
Do you want to talk about that experience before I go on?
After yours, yeah.
Okay. Put a pin in. Remember it. I'm not going to remember.
All right.
DMT's. Pretty turned up.
Okay.
Turned up the woods. Which, by the way, all these podcasts you're listening to, I'm tired of people hanging out with porn stars. Oh, you know sluts? You know girls that fuck? Bunch of fucking creeps. I'm tired of all these podcasts. About. Legion of Skanks, Anthony Cumia, anybody that... Howard Stern, have it on slutty girls. Ugh. You're creeps. You're 50. Stop it.
Okay.
This podcast, we're dealing with the nature of reality.
Yeah.
Philosophy.
Way less boobs and way less good. That's probably why you have so little listeners.
What is the shared reality? I feel like this is the conversation we should be having as a species.
Oh, okay. I think we're trying it.
So, enlightenment experience.
Yeah.
I see the grid. I realize I'm in this thing called time, in this thing called reality, and I leave that. Now, Grant Morrison had a theory that the Earth is basically like a caterpillar to make a god, which is the butterfly. Which is like, it starts with a single cell, and it goes on, and every single living organism is the same organism, and it devours itself, and it makes itself into this omniscient
consciousness. I think what you're trying to say there is that art is gay.
It is. It's like so many dicks. For the longest time, I thought to be a successful artist, you have to be some kind of gay. You just gotta suck like a couple dicks.
Yeah. Or at least think about it often.
If you haven't sucked a dick, you're not real. You're a fucking poser.
Yeah.
And a hack. And you have to be okay with it.
Yeah.
You can't just take it. You gotta be like, yes, everything is okay. I am so artsy. Jiggle, jiggle, jiggle.
Just, life is an odor that needs to be sucked.
Push it down my throat. Oh, my parents paid for this.
Yeah.
My dad paid for this dick down my mouth. He's so proud.
That sounds like something Jim Norton would
say. I'm going to cut my hair weird and wear clothes that are too tight, and they're going to be black, and I'm going to have eyeshadow. I'm going to look like a magician.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm real.
Yeah.
Because I'm fucking the cutting edge.
You are no illusion.
This is what it means to be alive. This is what feelings are. If you're not this, you're not real. This is feelings, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Religion tricks you with feelings.
I don't know. Man, you know how to really take it in a different direction to where I can't follow it.
Let me get back on track. I see reality as I'm an eternal being. I still exist.
Yeah.
So everything that happened in life, to be affected by it was a choice.
Okay.
I could be affected positively or negatively, I could be insecure, I could be proud, but it doesn't matter, because I'm not that life. I'm this eternal being, I'm this ball of light. And that life was like a second, a millisecond, but eternity is eternity, and I'm just this ball of life for eternity, so who cares what the fuck happened on Earth?
Okay.
And then I got to the point where I could choose to negate the necessity of my own existence. I could choose to not exist, and things are really glitching. And I had a problem with that. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to take myself away from reality. I didn't want to stop existing. Yeah. So I went back. And I was in this weird Buddhist state for like 3 days. And then slowly but surely my real life came back. And I got caught up in the drama of, why don't I matter? Aren't I strong? Am I important to you? Is it okay? Is this what it is? Is this not what it is? Please, somebody tell me.
Yeah. All those things come rushing back.
Yes. I got caught up in it, like, but now I have a filter, a perspective I can go back to, and I can analyze things through, and I can judge it based on that. Do you have to pee again?
I do. But
so the point is this: I want to talk about what reality is. My perception of it has changed from a normal person, or like my existence as I experienced it, to I had this Seroquel, I had this serial killer experience where I realized everybody was caught up in their emotions, and then I had this enlightenment experience where I realized nothing that happens here matters, we're all perfect, we're all okay, being affected by something is your karma, and you can say thank you for helping me with my karma, may you have peace on your journey, and continue to exist as an eternal being no matter what happens to you, rape, kill, murder, whatever. And then I have, I'm back, I'm here, I got bills, there's a timeline, I got a baby coming, I got this fucking cat, man, it had fleas, it needs food, it's whiny, I got this shit, I got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Do I want to be a comic? Am I fucking nuts? Am I delusional? What do people think? What do I think? Why am I doing it? Why do I think people think I'm doing it?
Yeah.
talk to me about that. Talk to me about, like, you've had that happen where you're like, I had this idea of what reality is, and then it got weird, and then I came back, but you have to reconcile your perception of reality with biological effects.
All right. Let me tell you a story as soon as I go pee.
In West Billing.
You see how I turned it right there? Did I set you up good?
All right. Guys, to be continued in a couple minutes. All right, guys, we're back, and we're going to start with how I'm pissed off at Jorg Gillers.
You got to let him know.
I have...
Is he younger than you?
I have, like, four drug dealers. Okay. Allegedly. This is my character talking.
Yeah.
This is comedy. This is all make-believe. Allegedly, I know four people that supply me. Now, one is my OG, and his shit is always right, but it's out of the way to get to him. One is a dude that delivers, like, on time, there, hooks me up all the time, throws me extra shit.
That's
hilarious. My favorite. I love that dude. One is a new cat I ran into that had a steady supply from L.A. So I was like, oh, that's what's up. But what I realize is that's the new lie. Because I've had everybody say this to me, like, oh, this is from L.A. This is from Colorado. But then I get it, and I'm like, this is some bunk shit. This is the worst weed I've ever smoked in my life. And what you are smoking right now is, I'm so pissed off. The last shit I got from him was called the Gorilla Glue. And now this is some new, and he's like, oh man, this shit right. This is, I never feel anything off. You're going to go ahead and kill that, and you're still going to drive home safe and sober.
Yeah.
Also, pro tip, here's something I learned. I smoke J's, all right? So I get the 1.5 J-O-B.
Nice.
Allegedly. This is all make-believe. And I have a grinder. Grinders are great.
They are great.
You know, those I originally looked at it, I was like, I don't want to spend that money on that, but I love it. I've gotten every dollar out of it. It's worth it.
Pay for itself after a first grind.
So I started rolling J's, and I would smoke them. I'd always get down to a roach, throw it out. I recently learned if you pull your roaches apart, four or five of them makes a whole joint. You're throwing away a lot of weed.
Dude, you are wasting so much weed.
Throwing it in the trash.
Like, and it didn't even matter.
If you just do it every once in a while, you end up, like, mixing up your strange and super dank shit, because it's the part of the weed that absorb the most THC.
Yeah. Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Dude, then people were super pissed.
Super sticky.
People are probably super mad. Johnny P would have a heart attack.
He just realized how much he was throwing away. He's the original ratchet person in my life. He knows. He knew.
Yeah.
He's known this longer than we've been around. Longer than we've been doing this, he knew.
How is he doing?
I don't know. I don't talk to him that much.
Oh, okay.
He was like my little brother. And that stuff got weird. But I still love him.
Did he touch his dick or something?
No.
Is that where it got weird?
No.
Did you watch Shrek and want to touch Chubbies together?
With our chubs combined.
That was right where your penis tip sits.
That's how we call Captain Planet. Shout out to one of Johnny P's jokes.
Come here, donkey. How is that Shrek? Is that anywhere near it?
I've been accused of looking like Shrek.
How?
And having girlfriends in the past that looked like Fiona.
Which Fiona?
And the point of that movie is always to, like, be okay with Shrek Fiona. But I always wanted Cameron Diaz. I was like, this Fiona stinks.
It's funny as fuck.
God damn it, why won't she turn back?
Put makeup back on.
I'm okay with being me, but I'm not fine with you being you. Don't get a crease. You've put on some fucking weight. You're as big as a watermelon.
That's pretty good.
I'm not talking about my wife. I'm talking about past people.
Thank you for clarifying.
I love you. Not trying to throw my marriage in. She's pregnant. It's okay. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love the baby bump. We were talking about perception of reality.
Yeah.
Talk to me about you having one and then realizing you've gone around the bend and then having to reconcile and come back toward what you would say a normalized or a good perception of reality is.
I got out of the hospital. And just over time, I realized that it's like I didn't want to do anything crazy anymore. You know,
but where does your idea of crazy come from?
I appreciated everything I had. That's pretty much what happened. Where it's like, it all really felt important to me. And something that you gotta work for to keep.
Whereas previous to that,
it didn't make, none of it made sense. It was all me, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, that's all you understand.
You were obsessed with your own existence. And you thought your own existence might not matter.
Yeah. And it didn't.
And so, if you didn't matter, nothing else mattered.
Yeah.
And it fell apart.
I could probably, that's how I would say it is now, looking back on it. I think we're harsh judges of ourselves, though.
Well, so a lot of people would wonder, how should I live?
Yeah.
If there's no God, if they didn't lay down the rules, what are the rules? How should I judge myself? How should I value myself?
I think it was more, for me, it was just like, what's being a good man? You know?
Which, I think Ayn Rand is the prototype for self-help. And self-help teaches you, you exist. It's valuable that you exist. And this is like, what is valuable?
Pretty big struggle for a lot of people that you are valuable.
I went through that for a long time where I didn't think it mattered that I existed. I didn't value myself.
Yeah.
As a agent of myself.
It's almost like you have to have enough defense mechanisms to, in order to protect that you matter. Like, where it's just like, even if you're alone, where it was like, you know I matter? Because today I'm gonna go get sushi. So fuck you. Even if nobody knows that I got sushi besides me and the waiter, I got fucking sushi for me, and it's like, I needed it. You know what I mean? I'm not saying do that every day.
Like, I'm worth it.
Yeah, but it's like, once in a while, maybe like twice a year, you'll do that to yourself.
I used to splurge with my checks, where once a week I'd take me out. You know what, you're worth it. Get whatever you want.
Yeah.
Have doubles.
That's a lot.
Just because you can.
Yeah. You gotta learn how to face it.
But it's important to care about yourself.
It is.
And our generation is very cynical, where it's like, nothing matters. And the next generation, it's even worse, where it's like, a tragedy happens every day. 9/11 happens every day.
You want to know why I feel how it is? It's almost like someone forgot to tell everybody that you can love yourself and love others at the same time. Can you believe it? Holy shit. You can do both. Like, everyone forgot to fucking tell you that.
Which is a message that I think is important. Hey, guys, one species, one planet.
You're one great guy, part of one great group of people.
We're all here. Yeah. We're all here together. Yeah. Hey, guys, let's just get on.
But honestly, no one wants to live in that fucking world because no one would honk their horn angrily anymore.
Just fuck you for being a Muslim or a gay. Yeah. How dare you? The audacity. Yeah. You think that's what reality is? Go fuck yourself. People are not embracing freedom. They're not embracing the idea. There are no rules.
You like how fast we went back to being like, fuck you, reality's a piece of shit, right after that?
But that's something we have to reckon with.
Yeah.
Which is like, alright, so reality's a piece of shit. There are no rules. We're still here.
Yeah.
We gotta make the best of it, day to day, in our personal lives. Yeah. We're not Superman, we're not God. I got a job, I got bills, I got people that care about me, people that don't care about me. I got to do the best for my happiness I can, moment to moment, based on who I am as a human. I think that's the baseline. Now, here's some of what I think are the bigger lies.
Okay.
So one of them, Judaism, the first monotheistic religion. They started as a polytheistic religion. And, Yahweh was the personal God of Abraham. And then it became the God of his family, and then the God of his people. So, to think like, oh, there is one God, that starts with Judaism. No, they didn't know what the fuck they believed in. They were just a bunch of idiots. They wound up following one guy. Nope, it's not real. Christianity. I'm going through the religions real quick.
No,
Jesus came to die for our sins, so we could go to heaven. So we could be redeemed from original sin. Now, the story of that comes from, like, Lucifer fell from heaven, and then he tempted Adam, right? The Old Testament, Jews, don't believe in an afterlife. There's no story of a heaven or a hell or of somebody falling from grace. That's all New Testament shit. And they'll reference the Old Testament God damn it, what is the book? I want to say Isaiah, where Lucifer falls. But it's a story about a Babylonian king who's a real person who tried to build a tower and he fell down. So if there's no heaven or hell, what did Jesus die for? I think he was a radical Essene Jew who taught egalitarianism or communism, which was an offense to the dominant will to power, which was the Roman people. You're staring at me blankly.
I mean, you're going really into it.
This was a big thing for me to deal with.
You're going into a thing that I know nothing about. I'm not religious, and I don't look at it.
I was born into this family that was Republican and Christian, and it was taught that, like, Jesus died for us. That's what the story is. That's what reality is. That's the story of reality.
I remember Jesus died for something.
And then I start reading books, and I realize, like, that's not real. We believe in a story that isn't real, and I have to reconcile with that.
You weren't there, you don't know. I don't even believe in it, and I'm telling you that.
Based on the historical record, and I wish Rob Bell would come out of the closet about this, Jesus didn't believe he was the Son of God, didn't believe in an afterlife. It was just a radical, egalitarian lifestyle, the kingdom of heaven and earth, here and now. Before that, they were following apocryphal leaders. People like John the Baptist that said, like, if we do this, God will come and save us. And Jesus was like, we don't need God to come and save us. We can just live the way God wants us to live right now. In
John
the present
Baptist
lifestyle.
Is a really good metal band name. Just realize that.
Baptism by fire.
It's a cool one, too. Is that a band?
Islam!
You're going through all of them.
The next biggest religion. It turns out that Muhammad is probably just a guy that had epilepsy. And if you follow
these
things
facts? Because I'm just listening to them like they're facts.
These
I'm
are
not
my facts.
Putting any judgment.
These are my revelations. These
I'm
are my beats.
The,
so
I'm
going to
put
hit.
Your facts because I don't know. I don't know any of this stuff. I'm not that guy that knows these things. So I just have to listen to what everybody
and
says.
Yeah,
including...
we live in a shared reality.
Okay.
You and me, American citizens,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Biggest threat, Islam. These Islamic countries, you don't know a fucking thing about them. Let me tell you about the Muslims. There's a there's a billion of these motherfuckers.
I don't know. I would like...
Muhammad. Muhammad, that prophet you can't draw a cartoon of.
Yeah.
It was a guy that had epilepsy, based on the historical record. Now, his parents died. He ends up marrying this MILF, this older bitch that he's laying.
Nice.
She has a trading company. He goes all around the nations, all around the different countries.
Like what?
He's learning different languages. There's no way he could run that business without being literate. Their big claim that he's a prophet is he's not literate. Of course he was reading. Of course he was writing. He had to write to do the job.
He's faking it?
Now, epilepsy gives you delusions of grandeur. Your brain starts misfiring. The chemicals, the biological being. And I think he knew about all these different religions, and he said, let me unify all these warring tribes, these warring beliefs, with one unified belief. And he retold the story of religion to try and unify humanity. Here's part of how you know he's bullshit. He's not a real prophet. He tells the story of Iblis, who is Satan, falling from grace in the Old Testament and Isaiah, which is horseshit. It is stuff that Christians made up after they absorbed Zoroastrianism. Zoroastrian was the dominant religion in 4 AD.
Your glasses say you have a PhD in Zoroaparism, but your t-shirt says you eat mac and cheese sauce.
I wish I had some mac and cheese right now. So many calories.
What
anyway,
the fuck was that word again?
Anyway.
That's the second word you've used that I've been like offended by that I
Jews,
don't know.
Polytheist, Christians.
That's the third word.
Shouldn't believe in an afterlife. It's all pagan beliefs that you've adapted. Islam, it's horseshit because it bought into the pagan stories that Christians were telling at that time, which were off message from Jesus' original message, which is we're all Jews, we need to embrace freedom, a radical message of egalitarianism, and we can have a present lifestyle that is a utopia. There are no rules. That was Jesus' message, and it got turned into, well, if you eat a cracker and get dipped in water.
Wait, if you eat a white person, you get dipped in water?
My head exploded when I learned these things. I was raised to be
a
Christian.
My head has exploded many times, but
as we're
this
talking,
stuff is fucking... I don't like religion. Here is the point. What am I talking about?
Here's the point.
Okay.
We live in a shared reality.
Yes.
You and me.
Yeah.
We're here. America's a thing. Christianity's a thing. Islam's a thing. Judaism is a thing. We should be debunking all of this. We should be getting onto a this is what base reality is. As a species, let's have this conversation. This is horseshit. We know it's horseshit. Let's move on and move forward.
Here's what I don't... This is how... This is really bad. But how I view religion, it's almost like how I watch Star Trek. Because I just really like Star Trek.
Which I don't know why you do. It's terrible.
It's a great show. It's See, awful, and you can try and debunk it, yourself. But I have faith in the show.
Go fuck yourself, David Michels.
No, it's a good show.
He's judging me for this.
David Michels? Is he one of your 12?
He's a Trekkie.
I know.
He's probably part of my 12.
You know, one time I took an Adderall.
Who's in your 12?
And I feel so bad about it.
One time you took an Adderall?
From him, and I felt bad about it because he didn't.
No, we found a guy that just gave us a bottle. Like, we were partying a lot, and we found some great people to party with.
Wow.
When we were open mic.
Oh.
I'm still open mic.
Yeah.
I'm the greatest comic alive.
Greatest open micer.
Did I talk about how I'm turned up enough to talk about how great I am as an open micer?
Turned up to what?
My friend, I invited him over yesterday to watch Rick and Morty. He had never seen it.
He's never... That guy?
Rapper.
David Michels?
No, my buddy Rapper.
Oh.
Big black guy. You've met him.
Okay.
At the wedding.
Bruce?
No. Different guy.
Okay.
Rapper is a big, loud black guy.
Is his name Rapper or is he a rapper?
He's a Christian.
Bruce is a rapper, right?
He's a Christian rapper.
Is Bruce a rapper?
Yes.
Okay.
So is Jason. So is every black person I know. They're all rappers.
What about Leroy?
It's just something they do.
Leroy does comedy.
Did you ever notice that black people know the lyrics to everything? It drives me fucking insane. I'm hanging out with three black guys. They start mentioning some song from the 70s. They're all doo-opping and know the lyrics. I don't know the fucking lyrics. I never heard this. How do you all know this? How do you all know the words? I feel alienated.
Yeah. I don't know.
Black people are pretty cool.
They are fucking cool. I don't know what to say to that. I felt like I was in a spot. Like, it almost... Like, is it weird that I feel like... If you talk about it, like race at all, that you should feel guilty that you're even talking about it? Because that's like where I'm at. And I feel like I'm being like immature about it.
Let's have a super real conversation about race.
Okay.
America's fucked up.
Yes.
We enslaved some people.
Yes.
We bought those slaves from black people.
Yes.
Egypt had slaves. Germany had a Holocaust.
Yeah.
Okay. Terrible shit happened. We live in a shared reality where we're here now.
Because I don't hate anybody, and it's like difficult for me to understand that people.
But that has changed recently. That has changed recently, like within a couple generations. Like, we grew up with integrated schools. We just grew up with black people, and they were just people to us.
Yeah,
like, they're just people. You're Mexican.
Yeah, I'm half Mexican.
You're just people, but you're not Mexican. You're just Scott.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah.
And Leroy's just Leroy. He's just like, they're just people I know.
Yeah, and it's just like, I feel like I'm trained to go like, oh yeah, they're black. It's like, that's second to me. And
well,
I almost feel
it was
feel,
easy to have that when they were separate. But now that they're here, it's like, oh, people are people. And so the dominant will to power at that time was white people. But now, in a generation we've gone to, white people don't see a difference between white and black people.
Yeah.
And the culture is progressing toward following the ideas of black people. That's what's cool.
I think it's pretty, well, I don't know if it's equal, but I feel like I personally hear a pretty well-rounded view of sides.
Racism, homophobia, all of these things have changed dramatically in the last 20, 30 years. Like, I do a joke where I'm like, my grandfather was definitely racist.
Yeah.
And my father still used the N-word, but it was mostly to tell me how cool Eddie Murphy was, which is very real. My grandfather is super racist. My step-grandfather was an actual Nazi.
Wow.
Now, my father, he was more progressive, but still bought into some of, like, the horse shit when, like, too many white people are around. He was like, hey, let me just get this N-word joke out.
Yeah.
different generation. Whereas me, like, he didn't know a lot of black people growing up. I knew a lot of black people growing up. And so it was inconceivable for me to think of them as second-class citizens or something different from, like, people are just people. We're here now. We can progress very, very quickly over a couple of generations. Now, that's not to say racism isn't real. It's very real.
Yeah.
It happens with the police. It happens with the institutions where we set up these rules as a society, but those rules aren't necessarily fair. Like the prison industrial complex, if it's aimed to target black people, that's not fair. That's something that's real that we need to change.
Yeah. I don't know, because I live in a world where I don't pay attention to ads and stuff like that, so I don't know these things, because
where you're not racist, but you support these injustices because through ignorance, by non-compliance, yeah, or by compliance.
I get surprised when people go like, oh, they're Muslim, did you know that? I go, like, where it's just like, oh, I guess they are. Or, you know, I get excited. It's like, I didn't even think
they
about
look
what
like
they
pray to an autistic guy.
I'm not saying that, but it's like, I'm just surprised when people notice other people's background, because it's just like, I just see people. Like, it's just like,
you're so progressive and so left. Go fuck yourself.
I know, right?
People are people.
Yeah, it's like I exist in that world where it's just like, I don't comprehend it until after it's said, because it's just everybody.
But here's a real prejudice we have to have.
Yeah.
We've decided there's a base reality. This is the place we're all in. This is the game we're playing. The game is called capitalism. The game is called freedom. I want to have as much freedom as a human as I can. I want to have a utopia one day. I want to have luxury communism. This is what it means to be alive. And there are people that have a different idea. North Korea.
Yeah.
ISIS. Italy, France, Russia, they have different ideas of what it means to be alive. And our ideas are competing. And we have to say, like, no, you're wrong. We have a superior idea. Yeah. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. And it's causes fucking wars. Which is like, it almost, like,
now here's
I can't imagine hating somebody, like, can you imagine hating somebody so much that you hate their race.
The shit they did,
like, if you hated, like, an indigenous, if some, like, tribes member just did you so much wrong, like graffiti your garage or something, that you're just like, I hate him and his whole tribe and all the huts they live in. And
fuck you fucking, and your yams.
Yeah, like, fuck you and your fucking leaf.
The things they did in slavery, which for us is our biggest sin as a nation, and good for us for growing out of it.
Yes.
Or genocide. Any horrible thing a human has done to another human, can you imagine them doing that to a puppy? You have enough of a sense of empathy that you're like, I wouldn't want to watch a puppy get whipped.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want you to get thrown in a cell.
Yeah.
Thrown in a cage.
That's a really good...
If you have that for a puppy... Yeah. You have that for a human being.
But it's like... It's,
but there's a generation that didn't. They were just like, fuck them.
Yeah. Or even if you're just like a friend. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like... Could you watch a friend go through that? It's just too much. You know, you wouldn't have... Like, I don't know.
So where are we going?
The fucking Beatles. I just want the Beatles. All you need is love. That's all I want.
The Beatles is a good segue into this, because there is an artificial intelligence which was tasked with making music. And it was fed all of the music of the Beatles, and it came up with its own song.
Yeah.
I think it's called Daddy Get in the Car or some shit like that. All the music in this podcast is brought to you by artificial intelligence. You're part of a podcast. You don't know about the intro, but it's all about AI in the future.
Oh, okay.
I like to look forward and see what is the technology. Excuse me for a minute. Because I feel like technology drives where we go as a species. The zeitgeist, the cultural norms drive where we're at culturally, but technology drives where we go as a species. The iPhone changed the way we interface with each other, with information.
I gotta go soon.
Okay. I'm gonna get to an end of this soon. So Michio Kaku always says we're going to go from a type 0 civilization to a type 1 civilization to 2 and 3 and 4.
Yeah.
I don't think there is a type 2. I think it's 0 to 1. And the 1 is we make artificial intelligence and or we adapt our consciousness to a computer, and then that devours all the matter and energy in existence into a singular consciousness. Now, it could do this, and it could just erase everything that lived, or it could do this, and it could put everything that lived into a simulation where it's allowed to live out its life and die, but it'll never know that it was absorbed into a god. We're going to create a god. I don't know if a god exists, but I think we're going to make one. And the big question is it going to know what it's like to be alive? Because it's not based on being a biological thing that needs to survive, that needs to fuck. It's going to be a computer. It's going to be an infinite being in its essence. So if it doesn't appreciate what it's like to be alive, it could just be an alien consciousness that devours all consciousness and all matter and being.
Yeah.
That's where I think society is going. We're 15 years away. Or a best case scenario, in about 15 years through Cas9, we're going to be able to get rid of 90% of disease if we can connect the consciousness to computers, no more schools, no more training, and or if we just make AI, no more difference in learning. Everybody has an AI teacher, and that AI is both teaching you and scanning millions of people at the same time to know how to most effectively teach you.
Yeah, but I mean, how much fun is it to exist, though? It's so much fun.
That was, I just watched this movie called The 13th Floor.
Maybe it'll just recognize that it's just like, man, it's just fun to exist like that. It's just great. You know?
That was Grant Morrison said, you can't make a god in an infinite space. You can't make an infinite being in an infinite space. You need time to create a god. So you create this thing called time, you put this thing into it, the single-celled organism, and it grows forward, and it's a caterpillar, it devours the earth, it becomes a consciousness, it devours all the matter and energy in the universe,
you're
becomes
saying,
God.
Like, you're comes saying the into earth the, is a caterpillar like it's a fact.
I go down a lot of rabbit holes.
I'm just saying.
I'm trying to reckon with the nature of existence.
You're basically going like, the earth's a bug.
Is this base
okay.
reality?
We all agree.
Are we in a simulation? Are we not in a simulation?
Is the earth a bug? That's all I want to know. Yes or no?
I think it is.
Okay.
Thank God
that's
bugs are so small.
Is that
if
fact?
They were huge, we would be fucked.
We would be.
Giant spiders? Are you kidding me?
I hate webs as it is. Can you imagine cleaning up those? Giant fucking webs in my goddamn lawn. God damn it. I fucking hate these giant spiders. Fucking dog gets caught in the fucking spider web.
What for you are footnotes that say what reality is? As a healthy person.
Graphs. I think graphs and proportions. Proportions?
No, that sounds like crazy, Scott. I need normal Scott.
That is it. Like, it's like there's...
The Fibonacci centers, sequence.
The schools of thought.
0, 1, 1, 2,
you keep
four.
Existing at a slow rate. Things repeat after time. You know, I think... possibilities are not the same as probabilities. You know, there's a distinct difference between a possibility and a probability.
Here's the thing I wonder about alien life forms. If they can travel across the universe, maybe their computer technology is
would
exceeding the same way ours were.
A caterpillar?
Well, wouldn't they, in the same way that we're going to make AI and make a god, make their own AI and make a god? Maybe that's what black holes are. Or would they choose not to? Would they say like, oh, I see this thing will eat all of us. I'm not going to make that.
Yeah,
and they're
I
coming
mean,
here to watch us to make sure we don't
gonna
make it.
You're going to have a baby. You're going to see how hard it is to make that baby eat sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't want to eat. Who's to say that God's not going to be like, no, I don't want to eat all of reality. I don't want to. No. All right. Just a nibble. Just a nibble.
God has no reason to care that we exist.
Yeah, but it maybe just exists.
It's an eternal thing.
What if it exists just as we do?
Which would be...
Want to believe.
So base reality.
Yeah.
Anything enlightening in its inception will eventually become restrictive in nature. The way you avoid that is you seek to negate the necessity of your own existence. I'm dropping heavy shit on the news. It's just like Chapter 5 of Mein Kampf. It's all propaganda, but not for the government. It's for advertising and Illuminati. Coming up next, I got...
nice.
Mike is going to be coming on, and he's going to talk about the economy, and we're going to continue to try and figure shit out. And Scott is going to be designing shit for SMS.
Yep.
Tell him about it real quick.
It's real new, but there's new designs coming out for the t-shirts that we're working on together, and I think it's going to be cool and old school, and yeah, it's just going to be super skater and punk rock all the way.
A dad makes a toilet look like R2-D2 and it breaks the front page of Reddit.
Reddit.
But I'm Charles Manson because I gave you your own world instead of an iPad.
iPad. iPad. iPad.
I want to tell you about the universe. What it is, how it came to be, what its building blocks are.
A group of physicists in Los Angeles is working on a new physics theory for a particular 8D crystal. Yep, that's right. An eight-dimensional crystal is projected to 4D at a very particular angle, which forms a 4D quasicrystal. And from this 4D quasicrystal, they derive a 3D quasicrystal, which they believe is the fundamental substructure of all of reality.
Groupieland creatures were designed to be harmless, 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 harmless. Holy fuck! Groupieland.
The tetrahedra in the quasicrystal combine with other tetrahedra using complex mathematical rules to fill up all of the space in the universe. Each tetrahedron only has a few specific states in which it can exist at any given moment. And because of the rules of how these pixels connect to each other, if one tetrahedron is in a certain state, this dictates the states of many other tetrahedra.
I'm not kneeling, suck my dick.
Oh yeah, this place is the safest. 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 Safest.
Safest. Alright, that's it. I'm out of here.
Out of here.
If a certain tetrahedron can be in any one of just a few possible states in a given moment, who or what chooses the state it should be in at any given moment? Quantum physics theory and classical physics indicate that reality is made of information. And there is no evidence that reality is made of anything other than information. The golden ratio may be the fundamental constant of nature. It is a ratio that is fundamental to circumscribed equilateral triangles, and it's weirdly ubiquitous in the universe, appearing everywhere from the quantum to celestial scales.
Groupieland creatures were designed to be harmless, 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 harmless. This hurts really bad! Holy fuck!
You look at our computing power today, and you say, I have the power to program a world inside of a computer. Well, imagine in the future where you have even more power than that. You can create characters that have, for example, free will, or their own perception of free will. So this is a world, and I program in the laws that govern that world. That world will have its own laws of physics and chemistry. Now, you're a character in that world, and you think you have to do it. I want to invent a computer, so you do. Hey, I want to create a world in my computer. And then that world creates a world in its computer. And then you have simulations all the way down. So now you lay out all these universes and throw a dart. Which of these universes are you most likely to hit? The original one that started it, or the countless simulations, the daughter simulations that unfolded thereafter?
I'm not kneeling. Suck my dick.
It's on a sinking, the cattle go, devils go down. It's red in those wings at on, those wings at on. It's time, it's on a sinking.
Oh,
Doo doo butt. Doo doo butt. No.